Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So we've been talking about the Pocket Constitution as a special Super Monday thank you gift for anyone who pledges any amount. It is so compact it could fit in a shirt pocket, but it has each article and each section and each amendment to the Constitution and a brief summary of what each one means. And it's got an introduction, as I said, by Caroline Kennedy and an afterword by David Eisenhower. And we are delighted now to have David Eisenhower join us. He is the grandson of the former president and director of the Institute for Public Service at the Annenberg School at the University of Pennsylvania. He's married, by the way, to Julie Nixon, daughter of President Nixon. And Mr. Eisenhower, we so appreciate you coming on with us. Welcome to WNYC.
Well, it's great to be here this morning.
Let's start with this. You wrote an op-ed in Bloomberg Business Week in September,
yeah,
saying your grandfather's warning in his farewell address about the military-industrial complex still stands. And let me play for our listeners that famous speech excerpt, 44 seconds of it, from 1961.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
President Eisenhower, as he left office in 1961. So what do you think your grandfather meant by it then at the height of the Cold War, and what do you mean by it now?
Well, first of all, that January 17th, 1961, think of that, that was over 50 years ago, and it was delivered about 72 hours before another great speech, which was John Kennedy's inaugural. I think that President Eisenhower was talking about there is the idea that in the kind of country that we live in today, the kind of economy that we live in today, and so on, that there is always a there's sort of a problem that the founders who wrote our Constitution did not foresee, and that is the interdependence that we live in. And because of that, I think that, that it's possible that democracy can become captive of interests and so on, and that it requires a great deal of vigilance and energy to maintain a vital self-governing system. The idea is that democracy can be somehow hijacked. People can be persuaded to sort of withdraw from public affairs and so forth. This is a great lesson of the 20th century, and he, as a president and a commander during World War II, dealt with the great tragedies of the 20th century.
Do you think that he had a particular understanding of the military-industrial complex as a pressure group because he was the top general in World War II, or in spite of it?
Well, I think that, he understood the military-industrial complex. In fact, he devoted a good deal of his professional life to studying it for operational planning in the 1920s and 30s. And this was a period when I believe that the American government understood that World War One had really not ended and that we would be involved in Europe again. We began practically from the armistice forward in 1919. You know, we began developing a cadre of professional officers who would be around in World War II, and he was one of them. So he understood it because the Army had to understand it. They were going to be relying on a mobilized country and rapid mobilization in the late 30s and early 40s to meet the renewed German threat. So he understood it, and he also understood the difficulties or the the potential problems that creating any organization, large organization and institution, can cause. Ronald Reagan was very eloquent on this in other areas. Once you create a bureaucracy, he once said, or a government bureaucracy is the nearest thing to eternal life we'll ever know on this earth. Bureaucracies, whether military, whether even great corporations or other federal bureaucracies, say, large institutions, develop a mind of their own. And it is necessary to make sure that anything that we're paying for, anything that's governing us or whatever, works for us and not for them. That's the basic point of the speech. And it's very, very pertinent, not only in the 20th century, it's pertinent to our lives today. And it embodies an insight that institutions have a mind of their own. That's all there is to it.
David Eisenhower, grandson of President Dwight David Eisenhower, my guest on WNYC. And I guess now that we're in a Republican presidential primary season, it's kind of inconceivable to think of a Republican presidential candidate today speaking against a military-industrial complex, or maybe even acknowledging that such a thing exists. If anything, they're excoriating President Obama as almost a traitor for wanting to cut the military budget somewhat post-Iraq war.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the party has changed, huh?
Well, I'm not sure the party has changed. I'd say times have changed. The military budget in 1961 was far, far larger as a percentage of national output than the budget we have today. Our budget today is sizable, but it's a fraction of what the defense budget was then. I think that neither side is really talking about the complex. If there are institutions that are in some ways self-perpetuating and not precisely under Democratic control at the moment, it could well be not the military but the financial sector of this country. And I don't see either side talking about that either. The point is, democracy is something that requires countervailing powers. It requires checks and balances. It requires an alert citizenry. It requires an awareness. One reason why we put this pocket constitution out that you referred to is not so much, pop quizzes, conversations on trains about what is or what isn't constitutional, or any thought that an individual is going to wind up in a situation where their constitutional rights are going to be litigated. The thing about a pocket constitution or the Constitution, it is a reminder that you are an individual, you have rights, you have God-given rights, not government-given rights, God-given rights, and that you are expected in this country to be what you can be. And our laws they have your back if you do that. The Constitution is a daily reminder of that, which is why I think that we decided to promote it, just to put out a pocket Constitution that people could carry around or give to their children.
And in your essay in the pocket Constitution, you wrote that the framers believed a constitutional democracy could not endure without the broad understanding of its essentials. So that's an important concept, too.
Well, they were reading from history, and they understood the pressures on a democracy and the fact that self-governing democracies are really rather short-lived in history, which is exactly what the Eisenhower Farewell is about. It's the premonition that, particularly the way we live today, there are a lot of pressures on us to sort of get out of the way, yield control of our lives to panels of experts, whether they are corporate experts or whether they're government experts, to just sort of stand aside and let others run our lives. To the degree we just yield to that unthinkingly, we cede what Dwight Eisenhower and the founders really thought was the most important aspect of America, and that is our right to self-government. And they saw it as a challenge. Founders conceived of themselves as, they studied Roman forms. And if you're studying Rome, you're studying the Republic, you're studying Roman law and so on, you are also conscious of the great book that was published about the time they were writing the Constitution. That's Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. The idea that a republic can be short-lived, and in the case of Roman history, long-lived, actually, but spectacularly overturned by the Caesars.
So you suggest some ways that families might use this pocket constitution, like read the 26th Amendment with your child when they turn?
I like to just carry the thing around. And I would suggest people just carry it around in a briefcase, just in a little pocket in the briefcase. And that's just a reminder. I am a citizen.
And it keeps coming up in the news. Obviously, the Commerce Clause, as I mentioned earlier in the show, very much in the news because people on both sides of the Obama health reform argument are using it to say whether it's constitutional or not.
Yes, and I know. I think that's going to be where the action is, in fact, in constitutional law over the next 5 to 10 years. So there may be some big changes. And the Commerce Clause, or our understanding of it, is one of the really fundamental points about the Constitution. And our understandings change somewhat in accordance with circumstances. The underlying idea, I think, remains the same. But, Commerce Clause is going to be huge.
And as the interpretive paragraphs near the Commerce Clause section of this pocket constitution mention, the current Supreme Court has been starting to limit the historical interpretations of the Commerce Clause. So, for example, they've struck down in recent years the ability to use the Commerce Clause to protect a school against gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to do it saying that guns are transported across state lines,
right.
So it's interstate commerce, but the Supreme Court struck the ability to regulate that down.
Well, that's right. What they're looking for is more, I would say, literal impact on interstate commerce. I think that is a response to very, very loose interpretation of the Commerce Clause as a way of just imposing a version of general welfare on legislation and so forth. But that's we'll see where that goes. We're in a very somewhat conservative era. We're in a pro-business era, no doubt about that. And the court is an institution that's going to reflect kind of the trailing wisdom on this. I think they're likely over the next 5 to 10 years to trim Commerce Clause powers quite a bit.
David Eisenhower, grandson of President Eisenhower, my guest, he wrote the afterword to this pocket constitution. I did like, by the way, how you suggested in that afterword that families might use the pocket constitution by reading the 26th Amendment when your child turns 18 and registers to vote and things like that.
Yeah.
Before you go, I read this weekend that there's a conservative attack on the President Eisenhower Memorial designed for Washington, D.C. by Frank Gehry,
mm-hmm.
because the right-wingers like Grover Norquist and the Heritage Foundation want a triumphalist neoclassical design like the statue of George Washington clad in Caesar's toga,
right.
Or the painting that portrayed Napoleon as Zeus, according to the L.A. Times. They say you've been an enthusiastic supporter of Gehry's more modest citizen-soldier approach, though you're not on the Memorial Commission anymore. What's your understanding of this controversy?
It just doesn't surprise me at all that there is a controversy. First of all, the Eisenhower Memorial is being planned for a very important site in Washington, I think that people are legitimately alert to what goes on that site. Number two, you take a career like Dwight Eisenhower. He's a general. He was a president. World War II is, in my mind, the greatest story of the 20th century, and I don't think there's even a close second. This is a phenomenal story. Great career there. He had a great presidency. How do you combine this entire story into one memorial? It doesn't surprise me that there are lots of ideas about how to do it. And Gehry had one idea. I think there are others that have other ideas.
Do you support Gehry's design still today?
I've stepped out of the design question. I was on the commission for a while. I had a conflict, and I had to leave it. My sisters are sort of Ann and Susan are kind of carrying the ball here.
So in our last 30 seconds, just tell me this. Wanting your grandfather portrayed as Zeus or Caesar in a triumphalist pose, is it in a way the military-industrial complex's revenge, trying to remake the Eisenhower Memorial in its own image?
Well, I'll say one thing about this controversy is You know, everybody is going to have a sort of an angle on this. I think people that want to turn him into a Zeus, if they do, may not want a memorial at all. The thing about Dwight Eisenhower is that he was a little de-democratic figure. He represents the American citizen soldier, though he's professional. He represents the war that was won by the regular GI, an almost amateur army. And this is one of the great watersheds in American history, the triumph of the common man. He's anything but Caesar.
David Eisenhower, grandson of President Eisenhower, and author of the afterword to the pocket U.S. Constitution that we're giving away as a thank you gift in the membership drive.
Wonderful.
It's been such an honor to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and enjoy being on the show, and good luck.
Thanks so much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.